Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
So Brian O'Driscoll and Eddie O'Sullivan were in studio earlier on this afternoon. We were looking back largely at the win over Argentina. 13-0 at halftime. It was 20-0 at one point. And I put it to Brian firstly. Both lads thought it was a really good performance. And I put it to him that we could be negative and talk about how we let Argentina back into the game. But ultimately, in broad terms, that you would have to say this was a really, really good Irish performance.
Yeah, it was. One of the better performances I've seen for a couple of years. It was a little trail off towards the end, and Argentina got their tails up a small bit and got into the game with tries at the right moments from their perspective. I think at points, Ireland were one score away from blowing them away. Mm-hmm. But just when they scored, that chip through at Tukele gave them a little bit of hope, maybe that they weren't going to win it, but they could save some pride. Mm. And then, you know, we took the lead again, kicked a penalty, and then they got back into it again. And it just, they hung in there. They're dogged. But I think it was a really good Ireland performance, a brilliant start to the game. The opening two-minute sequence was as good as I've seen Ireland. The ball retention, quality of passing, numbers to the ruck, end-to-end, backing themselves. I just thought it was a team playing with high confidence.
Yeah, because Joe Schmidt, Eddie, said, understandably, I think he said it was a little bit glum in the coach's box there at the finish just because we conceded those tries at the end in the last 10 minutes. So there was that aftertaste.
After having played so well for a long period of the game, to finish behind your own post for the last play of the game, obviously it was a bit of a sour taste. But I thought, just Brian touched on there, the opening to the game, I think we've seen Ireland, one of the things that I think has been a slight difference for Ireland is we've seen them run from deeper to get their exits. Like, we know we can exit through Murray, particularly, and Sexton, and very effectively. We did that against South Africa very well. But I think we've seen us run from deeper, get on the front foot. So teams now have decisions to make with their back three. Do the wings play up? If the wings play up and we can kick a contestable, it's a problem. If they sit back, we're liable to put spinach, you know. And
so we're less predictable.
Well, yeah, absolutely, and that's the whole key. And not just less predictable, but high dividend less predictable. Like, you're talking about, if you spin the ball around 22 and three rucks later, you're on their 10-metre line. That's a pretty big dividend, and you still have the ball, by the way. So that's, I think, something that we've gone to. Funnily enough, we've probably backed out of it a bit in the second half. In the first half of all the games, we've done that. Maybe they said at halftime, let's go back to, I don't know. But certainly it's a good thing to see. And as Brian said, it was very accurate.
What it also does is it keeps that back three guessing as to what's happening. So there's nothing more comforting as a back three of seeing your 10 back in the pocket, knowing that he's going to hoof the ball long and you don't have to work back. Whereas if you know that from the off, that there's a chance of your winger getting the ball, last thing you want is for them to have a big impact on minute one. Mm. So it's about contorting the game or manipulating the situation for later on in the game when, you know, the winger does play high because that threat is on, and then you put the ball in behind them. So I think it's just massive variety to Ireland's kicking game and exit strategy. And, you know, they have an exit strategy to get out of their 22. It doesn't mean relieve pressure. Sometimes that's the best place to attack from as well, because numbers are back in the backfield, not as many in the front line. If you have men on feet, then go and play and back yourself. And that's what Joe's given them license to do.
It was difficult to get a handle on where Argentina were in their heads. I mean, on the beach jumps to mind, but they've taken 50 long-haul flights this year. They've used a lot of players, played a lot of games. I mean, they must be knackered.
They look a bit bedraggled in the first half.
What was your read on the half-time situation where they came out?
The real half-time team talk was taken by Creevy under the sticks after Stockdale scored. Three minutes into the second half, Stockdale scored, and to be fair to Stockdale, he took it well, but the defence was abysmal. Like, there wasn't a hand putting him. They just, like, let him go. And I would say Creevy circled the wagons there and said, listen, if we don't get our heads into this game, we're going to ship 50. And they did. They responded to that. I think that was a turning point, because I don't know what they were doing. Like, everybody knows half time is pretty clinical on what you're trying to get through. There's a whole routine in terms of splitting backs and forwards. The unit coach is talking, the defence coach, the attack adjustments, getting all your fixes in. There's always fixes, whether you're winning or losing. And suddenly to find them on the field with 5 minutes to play, they're running around trying to stay warm. You just wonder what they use their half time for. And then they go out and they play the first 3 minutes like they're still in the locker room. So I think Creevy kind of pulled them together after that. We've got to pull ourselves out here, or we're going to get wiped out.
I was wondering, was it the old classic manager comes in, Roy Keane kicks over the tactics board and says, get the hell out there now?
Yeah, bangs of a coach that ran out of things to say
and just like walloped them.
Whether I saw the boys on TV were saying maybe they thought it was a 10-minute halftime versus a 15. Who knows?
Yeah.
But being out there, doing a longer warm up, knowing that they had a big 40 minutes ahead of them, seemed ridiculous. Mm. You even see a couple of the players, the sleeves were pulled down over their hands. Not the sort of body language that you're looking for when you're 17 or 20 points down at half time.
Yeah, it's very strange. I can't remember seeing something like that in a long time. Did you ever get so angry that you skipped over the detail and let's fix X and Y and you just said, get the hell back out there now?
No, you don't say get the hell back out there now, but there's been a couple of hairdryer moments, but they're very rare. And they have a limited value. You can't do that every week. And you have to pick your moment. And sometimes you think that the team are just not performing. They're not just sticking to anything. You want to jolt them into some sort of action. Mm. But look, whatever was said, we don't know. But I just thought they started the second half like they finished the first. They're like almost disinterested. Mm. But after that, once they decide to play, and they played some sets where it wasn't spectacular. Like they didn't do anything special, just ran really hard at us, and they cleaned out quick, and they were coming around the corner in droves, and we were on three penalties warning from the referee. Next one's someone in the bin here, so they did kind of get back into the game, and they dominated the second half with the ball. But they still, the great thing I think, another plus for us, they couldn't break us down. Like the whole autumn, our defence has been excellent, I think. Like, we've conceded 5 tries in 3 matches, none against South Africa, which is a hard thing to do, because even they're so physical, you probably leak one. But I think 3 of the tries have been from kicks. 2 against Argentina, 2 little grubbers, and 1 was an intercept, which that wasn't about defence. But and the other Fiji try was a grubber kick through by Nandola. So 3 kicks kind of unlocked us, which means the teams are now struggling to break a stone with the ball in hand. We seem to be better shape. We're getting off the line well. We're smarter at the rock. We're not over-committing. I think that's a big plus for us now. I think our defence... And there's like Brian probably confirmed this. Like, defence is about that whole structure and the system you're using. But it's also about confidence. You start believing everyone around you is on the same page. Everyone takes a step up quicker. You get off the line quicker. The hits are harder. So Ireland seem to be in that space now where they're happy to play through 15, 20 phases and nothing's going to crack. And that's a huge plus going forward to the Six Nations.
Yeah, I don't have a huge amount to add to that. I think our defence is possibly our greatest strength now. They are playing with incredible confidence. Very few logs, which is lying on the ground. Your players making tackles, getting back up into the defensive line, presenting again, rather than taking a breather. There's very little of that. I think the new laws allows for you to be able to do that, and there's no place for you competing in those half-hearted rucks. You either make a tackle and are able to compete immediately, and that becomes very clear and evident on impact, or alternatively you just become another body in that front line. So I think our ability to read situations has really improved, getting off the line, identifying who the first receiver is and whether they're a playmaker or whether there is a likelihood of them carrying into contact. There was a lot of that at the weekend. Players like Matera, every time he carried 2-3-man tackles because they knew that he was highly unlikely to try and look for any of those spot plays out the back. So I think our perceptiveness as to who the ball players are versus who the ball carriers are is one of the really improved aspects to our defence.
Unlike Argentina for Stockdale's try, where...
Which
they
one?
Made a double hit.
The first try or the second?
They made a double hit, and it was a sublime offload by Farrell.
Oh, yeah.
Just through the hands, and 2 guys hit him as he released the ball, and that was the gate was open there for Johnny. He was gone through and Stockdale inside. It was a walk-in.
That was a power play. That was lined up. They had looked at that defence as the likelihood of that's what was going to happen.
Yeah. Right.
And that worked to perfection.
Right. Yeah.
The other one that nearly worked as well was the setup. I think Murray actually had to kick the penalty to touch because Sexton was getting some treatment. The hit up with Bundyaki in the midfield left Adam Byrne out on the wing, and Murray went for the crossfield kick trying to isolate Landajo, who was the 9 sweeping on the wing. And if the kick had been a bit better, it was a certain try.
Right.
But he was trying to use that aerial prowess versus the smaller man
good mismatch.
In a position that he's not fully accustomed to.
Mm.
that was identified from the hours and hours of analysis that was done, that that's what they're going to do.
Right.
We can get one of our best players in the air versus one of the smallest men on the pitch.
Right.
And only, you know, Conor Murray would be kicking himself, because if it was a more accurate kick, and they still nearly scored,
yeah,
it was a definite five-pointer.
So that's a near-perfect blend of the brilliant preparation that Schmidt and the team are doing behind the scenes, married to the players getting the game plan, understanding it, and spotting the moment when to implement it, and as you said, but for the kick.
But even in the Stockdale second try, you know, again, they're a great team just going through phases. And the difference with this team that sides in the past is everyone is an option. And just looking at that small sequence of Stockdale, obviously ran a good line going through. Farrell showed really good deception out the back, but he was a viable option. He wasn't sure he was getting it or not. But what I actually only saw in the video today was the eyes of where Johnny Sexton was looking. He wasn't looking at either of his two attacking players. He was looking at the defender and looking at the shoulders as to where they were positioned. Mm. And it was off the back of that positioning, he went short for Stockdale, because he saw, I think it was Gonzalez's shoulders moved out, and he said, there's no way he can turn back in.
This is like the penalty kick taker waiting for the keeper to move.
That's exactly that. Yeah. And I think not all players can do that.
Yeah,
I think that's a pretty select player that can pick that sort of pass. We saw it good bit with Johnny. There was the Conor Murray try in the Lions during the year, putting George through the gap. It's those eyes of the defender not having a clue where he's actually looking, and he can pick either option, leaving it as late as he possibly can.
The defender gives you your play if you read him, but it's a hard thing to do, as Brian says. It's so subtle. You read his shoulders where he's looking, and that gives you your play. You know where he's not. We know where he's focused on, and the ball goes somewhere else.
Mm. So what happens then? I appreciate Argentina get a try, and they maybe have a chat underneath the post and say, "Come on here," but it was said at one point they had 70, or in the 70th minute they had 80% possession in that first half. It's such a big turnaround.
But at 20 points, once Stockdale scored, I think they were playing for pride. I couldn't see Ireland losing a 20-point lead, no matter what. Like, we weren't going to give up that much.
And do you feel it's important, like Ralph Keyes, funny enough, in commentary at that point said, now I'd love to see us doing New Zealand here and put a big number up.
Well, we couldn't get the ball back to New Zealand. They just held on to it. Held on to it. They kept coming in waves. And what undid them, whatever chance they had back into the game, after they scored, they gave us a score, as Brian pointed out. They got the little grubber through, and they got Tuchel in for the try.
Yeah.
And then the next thing they did is they gave away two stupid penalties. They were in the attack. One of the back rows tries to crawl forward and he's in the tackle. Penalty. Ireland kick it down off the top, hit it up. They give away a penalty for hands at the ruck. We put it in the corner, and then we divert the drive.
Mm.
So, like, normal service resumes. So whatever chance they had was extinguished. And even after they got the second try in the corner, the next time we got into their territory, they go offside in the middle of the field, 3 points. So whatever chance they had of getting back into the game, they undid themselves. They seemed to say, right, we'll play with the ball. When we don't have it, we're going to be sloppy.
Mm.
And we took advantage of it. That's why we got 8 points on 80%, 20% possession, because every time we got into their half, we got a score.
And how important is possession generally in the modern day game? Is it one of those stats that coaches and players sit around and say, it's very important we win the possession fight?
No, it's not. It's obviously easier to play rugby. It's more tiring to defend than it is to play an attack.
Wear teams down.
Yeah.
At some point, you could be careful. If you dominate possession, like we say against Fiji, we were in the 80 percentile or 75 percentile against Fiji, and we couldn't break them down. And suddenly they start to grow into the game, and they go like, well, no, we're not going to crack here, and we'll get out of this.
And you get frustrated
you
also.
You too, yeah. And you try the silly offload, or, you know, you take a low percentage play and you bring them back into it. So it's great to be in dominant in possession territory if you can convert it.
Mm.
And if you don't convert it, it can come back to you, because guys start, as Brian says, lose patience, and the opposition grow into the game. They get their confidence through their defence.
Mm. So in short, the fact that they didn't build on 20 points and Argentina got a few scores, that's not a genuine worry for you ongoing in the future. It's more a slight frustration.
I'd step back and say that the interesting, and you're kind of nitpicking, because we don't want to take away from a litany of goods out of it, but the three halftime team talks for South Africa, Fiji and Argentina would have been basically the same. We were in great position in all three games at halftime.
Mm.
And they would have said, get out more of the same, you know, keep the pressure on, one more score, they'll crack. Now, if you look at the three games, we got to the 70th minute against South Africa before they cracked. And then when they did, it was spectacular. We got three top drawer tries. Will you get 20 points at the end of every game in the last 10 minutes? I don't know. Like that's a long one. You'd like to see us ticking it over more, like every quarter, a couple of scores. That keeps your foot in the pedal. In Fiji, we didn't. No, a lot of changes in the team. And as Joe Schmidt rightly pointed out, young and experienced team get into a tight game, they tighten up. But again, last week, it was the same team talking after him, but we didn't. So I think they'll say, look, we've played some great rugby in the first 40 minutes of all our games. We've been in dominant positions. In different ways, we've closed out the game. How can we be more consistent in that?
I also think the game at the weekend, the scoreline was a bit contorted. Like, there was the 78th minute when they're down on their line. It was the most blatant penalty I've ever seen of a guy on the ground playing the ball and standing up and running off, and the referee said, play on.
That was bizarre.
They broke
that
up the other end of the field, and they got that try to take the wind out of our sails. So that's a 14-pointer, and we're probably not having that conversation if Ireland get a penalty, kick to the corner, maul over, which we've got a very impressive maul, and we get a 7-pointer of our own. So
that makes it 35-12.
There you go. Okay. And that's a very, very different conversation you have on a day like today. And
Joe Schmidt,
you could be sure he'll be writing in the referee's report going, how can you possibly give a penalty to, or not give a penalty to us there?
Stockdale was man of the match, and there was the lovely moment as he's backpedalling after he's scored his try and just almost taking a moment to half look up to the sky, and he says something to himself, I'm not sure what, but something along the lines of, I can't believe this is actually happening, but it is. So he got man of the match. Rob Kearney's a really strong contender for man of the match. He's had a great November.
That's great. It's great to see Kearney back.
But I mean, every text we ever get in about the fullback position is, when is Rob, like, Kearney's finished, can we get on with this?
I think it's been very harsh on Rob because, like, he's proved he's a class player. The problem he's had is his injury profile has been horrendous. The guy has had nightmare injuries. He's never got a run of when he's in the full of his health. And we know if he gets that run, his game comes back. And even now, he's just his really second game under his belt in a while, and he's back in the straps again. So as long as he stays healthy, I think he's going to even get better. Like, hopefully he'll get through Europe now after Christmas and into the Six Nations, you know. So, I'm delighted for him because I think a lot of criticism has been misinformed because I think he's, through no fault of his own, he's been injured so much.
He's a big game player, he is. And do you know what? There's a real security when you see someone like him that has that wealth of experience, that many caps, 70-plus caps, has played in lots of big games, lots of momentous games
for Ireland,
for Leinster in European Cup games.
Absolutely.
So he has been there and has done it. Mm. And you know, as the last line of defence, which is what you build your team on, is like the guy at the back, he's got to save us when we break down up front. Mm. He's an extremely good defender. We saw it at the weekend.
Yeah.
A couple of big collisions when it looked as though, for all money, that they were getting in.
Yeah, he made 90 metres, 13 carries, two line breaks, five defenders beaten, and as you said, that general security for the team.
So decent at the office for a fullback.
It's not bad. So you said he's certainly in the conversation for man of the match. Funny, we talked very briefly, Brian, before coming on air, and you threw two names at me as well, in O'Mahony and Bundiaki, as two other big contenders for man of the match.
I thought they were both class. The amount of work Peter O'Mahony got through. It's funny, he's almost assumed the role of what Jamie Heaslip used to do. Just he made other players around him look good, did an awful lot of tidying up, made an absolute nuisance of himself, stole ball, tackled extremely well and aggressively. I just thought he was so incredibly busy for his 75 minutes that he played. Probably if there was an unsung hero man of the match, he probably would have gone that. And then I think Bundiaki's defence was absolutely brilliant. He carried really hard, you know, in tight spaces, got Ireland over the advantage line, that one, that power play that we talked about, Murray kicking to the corner. He got an extra 3 or 4 yards when he wasn't entitled to it. But I just thought the quality of his defence, of his tackling and his impacts, he made some huge impacts, but also his ability to read off and scramble incredibly well. I tell you what, we are in for a treat when himself, Henshaw and Gary Ringrose and Jared Payne are all fit. I really don't know what combination
I think for Ireland,
put together.
He looks so focused. I mean, whether it's been a conversation or a realisation, he's actually focusing on the key things he needs to do, you know, to be in the team. Whereas with Connacht, I think he feels he has to push it out a bit to do more, to try and make things happen more. Mm. Here he just got into his role and did it exceptionally well. And I mean, when he carried, he was 4 or 5 metres over the gain line every time.
Yeah.
So, like, all that stuff, just doing the really simple things really well, and not trying to push his game out too much. I think that was crucial.
And we haven't seen any of what we've seen for Conor. We haven't seen any of the offloading side of things.
No.
That's like he's been playing it very smart. His first two internationals, no mistakes game. That's what Joe Schmidt, you know, really wants.
Yeah.
And he can evolve the rest of his game because he can distribute it through one bad pass to Farrell's inside shoulder. So be it. You're going to have that every so often. Mm. But I was incredibly impressed with just how he went about his business, the work rate of him. And Farrell deserves that mention too. I think his work rate was exceptional. So obviously a couple of nice touches. Yeah. So a much better showing, much better opportunity for him in this game playing with the first 15, really.
So it's all hugely positive, and we can nitpick, but I mean, it's all hugely positive and you can only beat what's in front of you. Is this team on its peak now?
Hope not.
Worrying question. Rob Kearney, 31. Sexton, 32. Murray's 28. Keane Ealy's 30. Best is 35. O'Mahony's 28. Sean O'Brien, 30. Devin Toner, 31. Like, if we could roll on this World Cup into next summer, that would be just fine by us, wouldn't it, Eddie?
I don't think another year makes any difference to these guys.
No?
In terms of their preparation.
It's 2 years.
Yes, well, no, like, well, if you say, if we had to play next year.
Even then I'd be saying, can we maintain
no,
this?
No, I think 2 years makes no difference.
I don't.
I think there'll be big changes after 2 years, but I think fellas are in a place now where the next 2 years will be all that matters to them.
But is Rob, I mean, respectfully, and I, you know, so is Rob Kearney not going to be a better player at 31 than 33? Is Sexton not going to be better at 32 than 34 and so on?
I think with certain players it won't matter,
no.
I think, provided they're fit.
Yeah, okay.
And I don't think you're going to lose it so much. I would worry for someone like Rory Best, who's 35, is going to be
37.
Like, just the miles on the clock and the punishment that he's taken. He's still producing great performances and he's still comfortably our number one hooker. But 2 years at that age is very different than 31 to 33 or 28 to 30.
I think you have a bit more latitude in the front row. I think you probably get a little more longitude. If you're lucky with injuries, I think he's very important, though. I hope he'll stay around because he's always been a leader on the team, even when he hasn't been captain. You've played with him. You know, but the fact he's captain now is very important.
Mm.
So I think, I think he'll be fine. But, you know, an injury can change all that. And at his age, if you get injured, it's harder to get back.
Yeah.
You don't heal as well, but... I think we're okay. I mean, it's you could talk about it, but I think 2 years isn't going to change it that much to be worried about it.
Okay. So Six Nations then around the corner. I mean, I'm getting ahead of myself here. So presume we win our two Grand Slams in the meantime ahead of the next World Cup and all that. So New Zealand are the best team in the world. And then where are we? We've got this All Blacks of Europe thing being thrown at us this year a bit.
Well, you know what? There's no doubt that New Zealand have been pulled back into closer to the chasing group. Over the course of the last year, starting with Ireland beating them for the first time. You saw what Scotland did to them a couple of weeks ago, or last week in Murrayfield, that they could have snatched their first victory against them, losing a game and drawing one to the Lions. Not as convincing as previous showings against Wales, beaten by Australia. So all of a sudden, that infallible New Zealand team, I don't think quite have that title at the minute. But they'll probably say that, you know, we're in the middle of a cycle, and they used to get in the habit of peaking at this time between World Cups and then not being able to get it done. And you know what?
I think it's a counter argument there, Brian. I think too that they've always gone out to win the next game. And what's happened to them is they've got caught at World Cups, where I think Hansen has taken a step back. They've won the World Cup in 11. They've won the last one. Hansen is saying, okay, I'm going to roll the dice a little bit here, and there will be stick if we lose because we're the All Blacks. But they've had a lot of injuries at the moment. They've bring a lot of guys through the system. They've tried guys out here and there. They've lost guys overseas. So they are in mid-cycle. And I think, they're definitely closer to the pack. I think if they arrive next year and the same thing happens, a year out of the World Cup, that would prove it. But I hold my fire on that one, see where they are in a year's time, where they're zeroing in on the next World Cup. They're doing 1-3 in a row.
And listen, I suppose it's just comparing it to that team that won that 2015 World Cup. Like, they just seem so much better than everyone else. Whereas it gives hope to the rest of us.
Yeah, no, it does.
There
no
is
doubt.
A chance. If we get New Zealand, if we did get them this November, we wouldn't have been afraid of them like we were in the past. We would have been an awful lot more expectant.
Yeah, and so where are we in that chasing pack then?
I think we're close. I think we're close to that, to the top. I think we're, if we were on... UK radio, I think we definitely wouldn't be ahead of them. We're on Irish radio. I think we're neck and neck with England. And I'm really interested to see what happens. I think a big test for Ireland come the final Six Nations game you know, if both of us are in the same position of managing to win four games, and there's a lot of rugby still to be played,
sure.
But I do think an opportunity to go and win in Twickenham against that side would set down a serious marker.
And it would be a big setback for them, because they're not quite firing all cylinders at the moment. Like, their attack has not delivered on everything else. Like, let's be honest, their set piece always has, always will be solid. Their continuity game is very strong, very physical at the breakdown. Their defence is very good. They have a top-end place kicker in Farrell. So they don't have to play brilliant in attack to beat you. They can still beat you out the other ways. But if they're going to win a World Cup, they're going to have to develop an attack. And that's the one thing at the moment that seems missing out of the jigsaw, this ability to pick teams apart. It's not that they're not trying things, but they're not executing.
Do you think they have the players that can
well,
think their way through
it? One of the problems is they have to figure out what their midfield is. And they've yet to figure out. Eddie Jones, the same with Lancaster before him, they never actually figured out what was their best combination at 10, 12 and 13. And it's a good point. I'm not sure that they have the calibre of player needed in those positions that they had way back when they won before.
They have these phenomenal athletes,
yeah,
but I just don't know.
Difference.
I just don't know. Have they got the same thinkers that necessitates winning a World Cup?
Okay,
but that seems to be an issue at the moment.
Just one final thing.
Because you watched back the Samoa game.
I did, yeah. And do you know what they were trying? They're trying Slade and Lazowski in the centre, and guys that would only have had a week training together. So, I'm not worried so much about that one, but they didn't have the best November. But one team that I am excited about, and in a weird, perverted way, is Scotland.
Absolutely.
Because we have them in our group. Very impressive what Gregor Townsend has done already. The question marks are around their strength and depth, but them coming to Ireland now, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that we can expect to beat comfortably Italy. We'll definitely beat Scotland, definitely beat Wales in Ireland. We'd hope to, but I don't think we can just turn up with any side and do it.
Oh, our bankers. And
Six Nations has gotten very exciting now with the emergence of
Scotland. The last two weeks with Scotland have been outstanding. The way they're playing the game is outstanding.
Yeah, well, let's talk about it. Just for people who didn't catch it somehow. So they beat Australia 53 points to 24. It's their highest points tally ever over Tier 1 opponents. Like, Gregor Townsend's stated aim is to play the highest tempo rugby in world rugby.
They're trying to do that. And I thought before the sending off, the quality of the rugby they were playing was excellent. It was right up there. They were looking to get into the outside channels every chance they got. And its defence spread out, they were prepared to go up the middle. They have a really good balance. Look, Townsend has cut his teeth in Glasgow very successfully. He's a Scotsman. He knows all his players. There's that uptick of a new coach coming in, but he has the credentials behind him as a Scotsman, as a played out half for Scotland. And the brand rugby Glasgow played was outstanding.
So he's bringing that template
from
Glasgow. And you have to remember, the vast majority of that Scotland team, or large numbers, are Glasgow.
Absolutely.
So,
and the Edinburgh
and they
guys
completely committed to what he brought to Glasgow in the past. So to bring that into the national team, and then for it to work, getting a win against Australia during the summer, beating them so convincingly this time, nearly getting the job done against New Zealand. All of those things, they are bubbling with confidence.
They're humming coming into the Six Nations. No, as Brian says, the fact they're coming to Dublin is no gimme for us.
There were boos in the U Arena in Paris, where it was 23 points apiece with France and Japan. So France have now won 3 of their 11 tests in 2017, and there was a simple conversion laid on for Japan, which could have made it 25-23, and things would have been very sticky. They're already quite sticky for Guy Noves now. Like, you said it last week, manager, sacred cow, they don't like making changes.
They don't in France.
They tend
to let the manager see out the World Cup. The big one here is what Laporte do. He's the president, and the president is the king, literally. So Laporte could leave things like, because he's the 23, he wants to win the World Cup in 23.
Yeah.
Whether he'll move on Laporte before that, I don't know. But the Six Nations is important to France. And if they have a bad Six Nations, but he's going to go into the Six Nations, what happens.
Do you think, but do you not... cut your cloth earlier, and why have two bad Six Nations in the lead up to a World Cup? Why not look at making a change? Because it's not working.
Oh no, it's not working.
It's not working.
I'm not arguing.
So why
for
another Six Nations?
I'm not arguing Laporte's
case.
I'm just saying what I think. I'm not arguing Noves' case. So I think what Laporte might do. I can see him fall on his sword before the Six Nations. Although in most cases, it probably would happen. But I think he'll get to Six Nations, and after that, we'll see. But there's nothing France are doing at the moment that would worry you in terms of they still have some good athletes and they still have some good individual skills, although not maybe where they were. But as a they look completely bedraggled as a team. They have no idea what they're at. Mm. It's kind of whatever you think next yourself. It's make it up as you go along. Mm. And in the modern game, that's just catastrophic. Like nobody, like even the best team in the world, the All Blacks, don't play like that. They play to a shape. They know exactly what they're doing. Like France are just making up as they go along at the moment. And you have to give credit. I watched a good bit of that game, and I thought, you know, Japan were technically very good. They knew what they were trying to do. They had a game plan, and they executed well. But a team like France should not be in trouble against Japan. There's no question or doubt about it.
And we have them first up.
Have we ever gone to Paris so expectant? Ever?
Well, you've been there a few times.
So dangerous, like thinking this way. But we would have gone in hope with some expectation to get a result if we played really well. I think if we play well against this French team, we should absolutely think we'll win.
But the danger for us is French rugby is still very emotional space. Mm. They will come into the Six Nations full of emotion. That emotion could dissipate as the tournament goes on if things go wrong for them, and they could flop. The problem for us is we're the first on the menu.
Yes.
So they will come to our game with just tons of emotion. And French team with emotion, because of their athleticism and their physicality, would be a handful. I'd prefer to play them later in the tournament.
I still think you need more. You need more in the modern game.
I'm not denying
that. And against really clever rugby players who have a great defence at the moment, I just feel that they're going to have to find so much more than what they've delivered thus far under Noves.
Absolutely.
To be able to live with Ireland that are playing well.
But they're probably their best 80 minutes in the championship could be their first 80 minutes. That's my worry.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they're a good team, but the problem is we're playing them in that 80 minutes. Yeah. So that makes it more difficult for us.
Yeah.
But other than that, I think they're in big trouble.
Okay. So Wales, it's kind of like, are we now kind of signing up to the general tradition that you just discount what Wales do in November? They just don't seem to...
You never know with them.
So that you just, we'll see what happens in Six Nations. Generally, they get it together.
They never have a good autumn. They've never had a good autumn. Historically, but they've gone on then and have really good Six Nations.
Okay.
So I just think, forget about Wales in terms of their autumn. There'll be a different team come the spring. That's always the case. I don't see that changing. The only thing I think is they're probably, their age profile is creeping up a bit and a lot of their key guys, you know. Mm. And you just wonder, like...
They've got some big injuries too, you know. They've no Warburton... Jonathan Davis is gone.
That's a big loss.
You know, George North wasn't playing. Liam Williams didn't play at the weekend. Mm. So you get that caliber of player back in, and they're good operators. So Gats, you know, coming back to Ireland, always loves this game. If you think that you turn up and get the job done against them, you get a jolt.
Well, they would see that would be like a benchmark for their Six Nations come to Dublin. And get a result. Mm. They would set that as like this means we're going in the right direction for sure.
Yeah. So a last point, just so I can kind of straighten this out in my head then. If you take the Irish performance on Saturday, those same personnel as drilled as they were, ready to go, the brilliant defence and the improvements in defence. If that team takes the field against the 2015 World Cup version of Argentina, who wins?
I think you've got a much better game, obviously. You have to remember too that Ireland fought back to within 3 points of that team and were fatigued themselves in doing so and then conceded a couple of sloppy tries that probably flattered Argentina a little bit at the end. So on that basis, I would say I back this current Irish team, but they're not the barometer, that Argentinian team. Yes, they got to a semi-final, but I think Ireland have to look towards England and what standard they're at, because you know come World Cup time that they'll be close to peak. And if we can match them step for step over the course of the next two Six Nations, I think that'll give us a huge amount of confidence going into the World Cup.
If we don't have to beat them, just be in that space, really tight games, and then we know we're in the right part of the building, you know, to get a result against. And they are our benchmark, really, I think, at the moment.
Okay, it's all shaping up very nicely. Eddie and Brian, thanks a million.
Cheers, Joe.
Off the Ball on Newstalk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.